Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's September 8th. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today and coming up today. Well, the weather, it's not looking so great for the next week or so. And we'll be talking to KTO reporter Anna Canny about a community panel she's organizing to examine how the weather in Juno is not just small talk. Speaking of talk, Mudrooms is back and we'll get a preview of next week's theme, Sourdough. The Yakutat Surf Club's a unique phenomena, and a new film, With the Tide, gives a glimpse into what that's all about. And Perseverance Theater has brought back Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and we will talk to none other than Hedwig in our final segment today. That's all ahead. I hope you'll stay with us. And the weather, well, we'll hear about the weather coming up here.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akhwan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin Katka Ke Jin Tak Anakaya Haanikak Gunchish.
Well, there's the Pogues, Rain Street. The streets will be rainy here for the next few weeks or so. And that's, you know, a common thing we talk about here in June, of course, is the weather. Well, here to talk about why weather is more than just small talk is KTOO's own Anna Canny. Anna, thank you so much for coming in. I'm sorry, Anna Canny. Thanks so much for coming in. And joining us as well is Rick Fritsch, Brenda Taylor, and Nimi Phillips. And they're all here to talk about this kind of interesting way of thinking about how the weather is talked about in Juneau.
Yeah. So all of us together are organizing the first STEAM Cafe in Juneau. And Rick and I are moderating the first event for the STEAM Cafe, which we hope will become a continuing event. So the idea is that we're going to be hosting a conversation on weather and some of the interesting science behind weather and some common misconceptions about weather, and just giving folks a chance to learn in a different environment. And so that's the goal behind these STEAM cafes, which are sort of the brainchild of the Juno STEAM Coalition, which Brenda heads up. So I might pass it to her to explain.
Let's talk about that first, and then Rick will talk to you a little bit about the weather stuff and some of the topics we'll talk about there. And then obviously, Nimi, because it's happening at SPICE, that's your role to provide that venue. So that's an awesome thing to do with your venue. But Brenda, yeah, let's talk a little bit about the STEAM Cafe. What a cool idea to sort of have community discussions about different topics. Yeah.
So we are super excited that Anna and Rick are doing this, and Anna did a great job explaining it.
She does a great job.
She does. Like, she should be on the radio or something.
We got to get her on. I know.
So the idea actually came from Anchorage, where they do a couple of these different series, and they call them STEM pubs and things like that. But the idea was, hey, there are lots of people who are really interested in STEM-y, science-y stuff. We've got so many people who know so much here, and how can we, as Anna was saying, have a different environment that's a little bit more fun and informal, for instance, than Evening at Eden. So that's why it's a cafe. That's why there's lots of food and drinks to buy, and also why there'll be games. So Rick's working hard on setting up trivia questions. That will be a combination, I hope, of like easy and fun and wacky.
Right.
My 20-something kids are trying to generate a playlist of like they play the song that's like the Weathermen or whatever.
Okay,
like you have 10 seconds, I've got it. And we've got some other games that are also created around Juno weather. So fun. But also informative, and a chance for lots of people who like care about these things to get together and meeting cool. each other and
hopefully. It's happening September 14th. It's from 6:30 to 8:30. And that's really cool. So sounds like so far you've concentrated on this first one, get the momentum going, have it really be high quality and get people really excited about it, and then start thinking out next subjects, next topics, things like that as well. And I'm sure that seems like a pretty cool thing to do with the restaurant, right? I mean, right?
Yeah. I'm super excited to have these guys, and I'm very excited and, you know, talking about Juneau weather and or weather in general, and getting to know a little bit more in an easy environment way, like you were saying. And we're super excited to have everybody come and taste our amazing masala chayas and, you know, a nice warm masala chaya. And
this is, by the way, this is in the cafe, right? Not the spice restaurant.
No, which the is spice kinda... cafe.
So how many people about can fit in there?
We can have about 60 people.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, cool crowd.
Yeah. We'll have a bartender, of course. We have drinks available and we have appetizers. If you haven't tried it, come try our chicken 65.
I get rave reviews. I hear people going, it's like, it's such a chilled out, cool atmosphere. Yeah, you hang out, have a little bit of something and little snacks and things like that.
And check out the art gallery.
Right. Well, that's really great. All right. Well, Rick, let's talk a little bit about the subject at hand. That's going to be this first subject, which is more than just small talk, the weather in Juneau.
More than just small talk. Right. That is for certain. There is so much to learn about weather and forecasting, and so much more to learn about weather and forecasting in a place like Juneau, Alaska, or Southeast Alaska. And I'm really excited about being able to share with the people of Juneau the intricacies of forecasting the weather here. A lot of it has to do with the mountains. A lot of it has to do with the inner channels. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we are on the eastern edge of an ocean and there's no data upstream.
Oh, right.
And that's one of the key things that I'm really looking forward to sharing with people. And then there's
a few buoys out there, but you know, that's kind of it, right?
Yeah. Four buoys.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm also looking forward to sharing with folks this coming winter. We're going into an El Nino, and there's things that go into that. And then also the question of why is it so hard to get the snow forecast correct? I'm not going to tip my hand. I'll share that with folks when they come to the cafe.
I sense a little bit of frustration there. I think about it. I volunteer here, but my day job is at Alaska Seaplane. So I also think about how weather is so much a part of how we get around, about our commerce on the water. You know, weather in a lot of parts of the world, you're just concerned about, well, what's the temperature, wind, precipitation? Right. That has three-dimensional kind of ramifications in our area of the world.
That is so true. Where we live here, you know, our automobiles are airplanes and boats. Mm-hmm. And our highways are the airways between the airports and the inner channels. And that in and of itself is such a difference for most people living in the lower 48. It's a whole different way of living and a whole different way of existing.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to be up here.
Anna, tell me a little bit more about the kind of inspiration behind getting this kind of hopeful series, at least this first talk, going.
Yeah, I think I came on just about a half a year ago or a little over half a year ago as a weather reporter, and I had a background in environmental science, but have learned so much about weather through reporting on the stories and talking to meteorologists about how hard it is to predict the weather correctly, how much really interesting math and science goes into building the forecast that you see on weather.gov every day. And I think there's a lot of sort of behind the scenes work that we don't get to talk about as consumers, I guess, if that's the right word, of the weather and that weather information. And so I think what I'm most excited about is sort of demystifying your local forecast and at the same time maybe either fueling or quelling some of your frustrations about the weather forecast, lending some better understanding as to, for example, something Rick and I were talking about is like why your weather app that you standard right. weather app on your phone might be wrong, and there's actually a reason for that we'll talk about. And I think that was my like main motivation for getting involved here?
It's interesting because I've lived in two places. I used to live in Florida, and I've lived in Alaska for 30 years. But in those two places, like, the National Weather Service was a known office. People like knew where the mm-hmm. office was. Mm-hmm. We heard from those people a lot for different reasons. But in a lot of the world, you don't really aware of a National Weather Service office in your region or in your area. You know, it sort of seems just behind the scene, and it almost seems like, well, it's the guy on TV that knows the weather, you know, like, that's the guy.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to have this firsthand account from you, Rick, about, you know, the people that are really looking at the science, really looking at the indicators that are helping us do forecasting and that sort of thing. Are you going to be discussing much about the relationship between climate and weather?
Oh, definitely. The two are inseparable, and there is a really easy way to understand the difference between the two. And it's summarized in this phrase. Climate is what you expect, and weather is what you get.
Right. Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah, the overall overreaching kind of thing is the climate, right? Yeah. And then the fact that we're seeing these global changes happen. Obviously, we're seeing hurricanes in the Atlantic like we've almost never seen before happening, that kind of thing. Yeah. And that's obviously a big part of us as a maritime climate.
Oh, definitely. Yes. And the maritime piece there is really huge for Southeast Alaska, not just because we have the inner channels, Stevens Passage, Chatham Strait, Lynn Canal, but because we live so close to the open Pacific Ocean. That is a huge impact in what we experience here in Southeast.
Yeah. And it just seems like it's, well, you know, it's just a part of our everyday. And as you, it's a well-titled talk, because I think everyone in Juneau and even Southeast Alaska, maybe Alaska in general, understands that it's a matter of really livelihood, sometimes life and death. Those kinds of things come into play when you're talking about weather in Juneau and in Southeast Alaska. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are, Brenda, I'll ask you, what are some of your, you kind of had your hand sort of raised there. Okay.
My hand raised. I'm a teacher.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I was a bad student, so I did not recognize that, but go ahead.
So the Juneau STEM Coalition, which is now the STEAM Coalition, we really set ourselves up to bring real life people doing expert STEAM ideas into the classroom. And how could we help with those connections? So I've been working with the Weather Service quite a bit with kids. And it's like, that's really cool. And I'll go home and tell my husband about these cool things I find out. But he doesn't get to have that interaction. So in some ways, this is like, hey, we've been making all these things happen for kids in the schools. So how can we now have these interactions for adults as well?
Yeah.
It's really cool to be able to talk with somebody who knows a whole lot and have it in an informal asking
questions.
Yeah, it
shouldn't just be the kids having all the fun with this stuff, right? Yeah,
yes.
I agree. That's very good. Well, what are some of your aspirations about other things? Or are there other ideas out there floating around? Or are there other kind of areas you want to make sure you hit?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So first of all, I just want to say Thursday really clearly because we forgot to put the day.
Okay.
Yeah. So just that Thursday's in everybody's head. And in terms of topics, one, we'd love to get ideas for what people would like to know about. Like, again, like this is a community, right? And so the more that we're responsive to our community, that's what's amazing about it. So anybody who wants to give us specific topic ideas or help us make these happen, I'm really reaching out to those 20, 30s. Like, how do we make cool games? How do we make this be the happening place to be on, you know, once a month kind of thing? But some of the ideas, how about the landfill? Like, can you really, what's up with recycling?
I couldn't agree more.
Plastic.
That has a finite date on it. And that the landfill is a really big deal.
What should we be doing? Yep. Menopause. That doesn't get talked. I don't know who the expert is here, but I know a lot of people who care about that. We've talked about doing fish. Like, here's the fisherman and here's the fish and game policy expert. And how do those kind of talk to each other? I really like the fact that we've got weather and the radio in the same place talking about, not just what is the weather, but how do we get people to know what's happening with the weather? Another idea, talk to somebody who does marmot research here in Juneau as a way to look at climate adaptation. How are the marmots adapting? And there's a lot of, he's working with schools. Again, that's how I met him. So that's another idea.
Yeah, incredible. Anyway, and there's so many, as you say, because we are the seat of state government and because we have such a large federal presence as well, we have all these incredible experts, know, whether it's environment, wildlife, fish and wildlife services, there's biologists just all over the place, right? Every second person you meet in Juneau seems to be a biologist.
Engineers?
Right? Engineers, that's right.
Maybe that was your, electric engineer.
That's right.
Like,
that's
I think we could really go and go and go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's terrific. Well, Anna, anything else you want to let people know about this? It's once again, the location's 112 North Franklin Street. That's where Spice Indian Cafe and Gallery is. If you haven't been by there, it's a really nice spot. And this is all happening Thursday, September 14th from 6:30 to 8:30. Anything else you want folks to know about what's going on? I might have covered a lot of it here. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll just echo Brenda's call for young people to come out. I'm in my 20s. People in their 20s, 30s, I think this could be a really cool event for people my age to engage with this stuff. And obviously, I'm biased because it's my job every day, but I've learned such cool little fun facts to keep in my back pocket about weather in Juneau. And I guess maybe you can enhance your future weather small talk by having those fun facts to throw out later on. So if you want to have that, shows what kind of conversationalist I am, I guess. But then you can come to the Steam Cafe and learn a whole bunch.
Sounds great. Well, it's Juneau weather, more than just small talk. It's happening at the Spice Indian Cafe and Gallery. That's at 112 North Franklin. Steam Cafe is part of this new series that's hopefully developing. And it sounds like it's gonna, as you have all those great ideas that, about things that we can talk about, all fascinating and all really vital to people in Juneau. Thanks so much to all of you for coming in and letting us know about it. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And have a great event coming up on Thursday. All right, we'll be talking more about talking next with Mudrooms. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K here at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and Mudrooms has really become an institution in Juneau. And I guess coming up now since 12 full seasons, since 2011. And with us right now is Rich Moniak from Mudrooms. Rich, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And also with us is Molly McCormick, and she's with Cancer Connection, but also is a storyteller for this upcoming week.
I am.
Yeah, very cool. Well, Rich, let's talk a little bit about Mudrooms just in general. Like I said, 12th full season. There was a full little bit of interruption there during pandemic, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, we lost a couple of years.
Yeah.
Well, a year and a half. Yeah.
But been happening there and really has just become something that people look forward to. Packs out the venue every time.
We've got a great audience. I mean, except this year we're going to not do a May show. Or an April show because we have trouble when the weather gets nice, like everybody does, right?
Right.
So, but when the in the early part of the year and through the winter, we pretty much fill the place.
This is good Mudrooms weather right now. Yeah, exactly right. And one of the things that's a real key to it, and people maybe aren't as aware of, but all the proceeds since the start have been going to local charities. You kind of name a different charity and do it for them. And I've just got a note here that you've raised over $147,000 to date.
Right.
Doing Mudrooms. That's incredible. What a great impact.
Yeah, that's just from the $7 donations. And we get donations, contributions from COPA for coffee usually. People pay for that. That goes to the nonprofit and the Rookery with cookies.
Yeah, but you've kept it simple.
Yeah,
I mean that's one key to it, you know.
And we as the board don't, we're not on a formal board. We don't touch the money. The nonprofit manages it, and it's the we got to pay the church, Northern Light Church, a small amount, and the rest goes to them.
And the nonprofit that's for this upcoming Mudrooms is the Cancer Connection, and that's what you're a part of. Tell me about some of the mission of what Cancer Connection's about in Juneau.
Well, Cancer Connection was founded in 1996. It's a grassroots nonprofit organization. Cancer Connection provides support for cancer survivors and their families and their support systems. We reimburse for travel expenses
for Southeast
residents. Mm-hmm. And we have a Seattle apartment for people to rent. Yep. And additionally, Cancer Connections holds monthly blended in Zoom and in-person support groups. We have a library And we also reimburse for two counseling sessions.
So there's really full, such a full service. It seems like it's just when people are looking at a cancer diagnosis or something like that, Cancer Connection is just a call to make, right? Just call Cancer Connection. And just, it may be that you use the services, it may be that you don't, but it'll really give you good background and information, and your folks are dealing with this issue all the time.
Right.
Yeah. And you got roped in to also telling a story, it sounds like. So can you give me a little preview of what the story's about? I mean, without getting too much into it, or is there maybe even just a title of your story? Or
Family of Sourdoughs.
Oh, a family. Okay.
My great-grandpa was born, came here, and was a blacksmith in Treadwell in 1885. My grandpa was born in Treadwell. My dad was born in Douglas, and I was born in Douglas and still live in Douglas. So I'm the fourth generation. So wow. That's what I'll give you.
Yeah, that's really, wow, that's pretty amazing. What a family history.
Pretty and, unique.
Yeah, very unique. And just not to give away your story, but has your family always like kept in touch with that history? Like you've known it, there's not portions that are lost, that kind of thing?
We've passed on and it's written down and I've recorded stuff.
Fantastic. Where did was your great-grandfather? Is that right?
My great-grandfather came from Pottsville, Pennsylvania in 1885, and he was a blacksmith in Treadwell, and he was Treadwell's first and only mayor, and then he went on to be the Douglas postmaster. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a fascinating family history that is, and so tied to the history of gold and all the mining and all that stuff that's happened in this area. Wow, that's really cool. Okay, that's cool. That sounds like sourdough. That's right up the alley of sourdough right there. That's a pretty good one. What are some of the other kind of things that you're hearing about might be sort of the topics of sourdough? And then also, who are the other speakers?
Well, the other speakers are Kevin Myers.
Kevin Myers, who just wrote his second novel, just released his second novel.
I don't know.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. I'll just get background that I know just so people know. He put out a really great novel a couple of years ago and lived in Juneau for many years and just moved back to Juneau. So his second novel is just out.
We got Eric Oraski, Rebecca Braun, Emily Mesh, and Taylor Beard.
Okay, very good.
And we need storytellers for our later events. You know, we're always looking. And, I'm going to mention, I've been on the board 12 years, and we have a charter for the board. We have one rule on it. And when we're at Juno Afternoon, we have to ask Andy Klein to tell a story.
I've never done a mudrooms. They've been after me for years to do a mudrooms.
So
one of these days.
One of these days.
One of these days. Well, I'll keep looking at the subjects, and I'll see if one matches up to a story.
Themes coming up. In October, we hit the theme is Plan B. In November, it's Growing Pain. Changing Your Mind is in December. What the Hell Am I Doing Here?
That might be a good one for me.
For January?
Yeah.
Stepping In It is February, and Stars Aligned.
All right.
We'll close it out in March.
That's all good.
And those are always on the second Tuesday of the month, 7 o'clock in the evening.
And is there a board?
There is a board.
And then without.
We refer to it as the storyboard.
Okay, storyboard. That's good. And then how many people are on that?
Well, Alita Buss was one of the founders.
Yep.
She's still on it. Mm-hmm. Jeff Smith, David Noon, Kristen Rankin, Summer Kester. I'm going to miss some names here.
Sure.
I can tell.
Yeah.
You know. We're losing a few.
Something in the 10-person range is on the board, sort of
six or seven.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And that board is the board the people that come up with the themes?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we ask for people to provide suggestions at our last show.
I see.
You know, and we get, some informally come in. So we get a lot to pick from.
Yeah. Never wanting for ideas from the crowd that comes to mudrooms.
Yeah. Well, I would hope that when people provide ideas for themes, they've got a story behind it.
That's right.
You know? I don't know if that's ever happened.
Right. Molly, tell me just a little bit more about certain goals or things like that that's coming up with Cancer Connection? Anything happening in the coming year?
Yeah. The Health Forum is at the end of October, okay. And we have a speaker and a yummy lunch, and we learn about, you know, healthy choices. And
great.
And Zink is going to be our speaker Ooh. This year at Centennial Hall.
Superstar Ann Zink. Yes.
Yes.
Very cool. And that's going to be at Centennial Hall at which day in October? Do you have that in front of you? Or?
I do not.
Okay, just the end of October. Look for the date.
Saturday, the weekend before Halloween.
Oh, okay. Very
yeah.
good.
Yeah, we do. So we just had the National Cancer Survivors Walk in June. That's another fundraiser we do. And then we do Beat the Odds Race in August. Those are the three fundraising events that we do.
Yeah, very cool. Well, it's certainly it's well known and been helping people in our community for many years, Cancer Connection, as has through the many contributions that people have made through the years, Mudrooms. And the upcoming Mudrooms is Sourdough. That's coming up this Tuesday, right?
Right.
And starts at 7?
7 o'clock.
$7 donation is what's asked for. 7-minute stories from 7 storytellers.
Right.
And it's become, as many people know, has become a Juno tradition and an institution and something that people absolutely love and fills up my neighborhood with cars every time it's I always know, oh, Mudrooms must be happening. I can't find a spot. It's a minor inconvenience for such a cool thing that's going on. So, Rich, thanks for all your work on getting Mudrooms together all these years. Appreciate it. Yeah. And Molly, thanks so much for telling a story at this upcoming Mudrooms and also for all the work happening at Cancer Connection.
I just want to say thank you to Mudrooms for your donations the next 3 months. Thank you very much. And thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Thanks to both of you. Maybe tomorrow. Welcome back to your community-supported public media station, KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. And the Yakutat Surf Club is such a cool thing that's been going on for a number of years now. And they have a new film premiere that's happening Saturday night. It's called With the Tide. And folks from the Yakutat Surf Club are here, as well as some filmmakers and all that kind of stuff. So Jay Donig and Ryan Cortez Perez is here, as well as Chelsea Jolly. He made me say it that way. Guys, thanks so much for coming in. How are you?
Great. Doing good.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, we were just talking about this the other day that you're having this event happening. So maybe I'll just start with you with talking a little bit about how the Yakutat Surf Camp sort of started. It's been going for about 5 years or so. And what the maybe what the idea was to begin with, and then how it's grown a little bit.
Yeah, so I started surfing in Yakutat probably like 7 or 8 years ago with my friend Dylan Quigley, and quickly realized that there were very few surfers in Yakutat, and the few that were there were probably above 30 years old. There was no youth surfing, so the Yakutat Surf Club kind of started out of kind of a question like, how do we get more kids in the water?
Yeah,
and then,
right.
And then with the help of a couple filmmakers, including Chelsea Jolly and Colin, we kind of started a surf camp.
Well, Chelsea, let me get your input on this. This new film, With the Tide, is a film by you and Ryan kind of teamed up on this. And tell me about how you got involved in this project.
Well, yeah, great question. Well, it was a team sort of effort. I was invited in by some friends, Colin Arisman and Sasha Burrows. They were connected with Ryan and they saw the cool work he was doing up in Yakutat and needed some help. And I have a surfing background and love working with kids. And so it all just felt like the beautiful recipe to be involved.
And what's the focus of the film itself? Is there a subject in particular, or tell me a little bit about how you constructed the film?
Well, we wanted to kind of follow the community as a whole. You know, it was such a big effort from so many different people to make it happen. And so I think the theme is definitely based around connection to nature and celebrating these spaces that we live in It's just so cool to see this in their backyard, you know, having such a beautiful ocean and wavescape. So, you know,
yeah,
being able to connect to that more.
Yeah. Jay, tell me about your involvement in this. What's your role here?
Well, Ryan approached me and just asked if I wanted to help and volunteer and be one of the instructors and one of the counselors, but not really counseling. And I grew up as a single parent. I mean, my mom raised us and I had a big brother, and I remember how much of an influence the big brother had on me and made me feel like I could do anything in life. And so we got to do that for these kids, and it's pretty amazing to watch them grow and make the ocean a safe place instead of a scary place.
I think that's something in Alaska. There's a lot of people in Alaska, for instance, that don't know how to swim, right? Because the ocean isn't that you don't go swimming, that you're not taught to swim. You're not taught to go in it. You're taught to stay out of it, you know, and maybe on a boat. But that's an interesting part of this, right? Like immersing, getting in there, showing how you can interact with it in a way that's a lot more in depth, literally, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was definitely felt in Yakutat. Like a lot of those kids and families are fishermen, and they're definitely like, we just heard a lot in the ocean, like, oh yeah, we're always thinking to stay out of the water. And there's so many, like, there's a couple different like heavy stories that we heard throughout some of the participants. Like they had family members that have had major accidents in the water. So I think the community at first was a little bit weary of letting strangers take their kids out, but definitely over time kind of welcomed us in and entrusted us, and some of the safety people that we brought along with us. And so, yeah, now kids and parents alike are excited to get in the water rather than just stay on their skiff.
How do you go about it? I mean, what do you need to get into the water in Yakutat?
You need a positive attitude, first off.
Number one.
You need a can-do attitude, I think, and you need a wetsuit, some gloves.
Like what layer? Like 8mm?
No, it's 5mm, like chest and legs, and then the boots are usually, I like to wear 7mm because I get cold really easily, but some people don't wear any gloves. I definitely think you need at least boots, because if you can't feel your feet because your feet are frozen, like it's hard to stand up.
I've heard it described as blue face surfing before, you know, like because your face is the one thing that's out there.
Actually, one of the first camps, we had one participant who was just didn't want to get in a wetsuit and thought they were tough enough to just surf with us. So when Kayla and I first did the first outing with the kids, there was about 7 kids, and one kid was just like, I'm going to go boogie board with no wetsuit, just in shorts and a t-shirt. And he was fine for like 3 hours. And luckily Kayla had made a fire. And then she's like, you should check on Paul because he is shivering and his lips are blue. Yeah. So yeah, it's true. You can definitely get pretty cold out there.
Yeah, I can imagine. Peanut butter and jelly. Yeah. Everything was cool. Yeah, that's fine. Fire and peanut butter and jelly cures a lot. Well, back to the film. Tell me about kind of how the process went. How long did it take you to put this all together between, I guess, both of you? Or how did you collaboratively work on the film?
I think we all kind of shared roles because, I mean, on the field production side, you're out there just participating in the camp as well as filming. So
it must be a challenging environment to film, right? Sand, cold, wet, salt water, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, coming in and out of the water. So we have land shooting as well as, you know, underwater housing for the cameras. But everyone was kind of, you know, sharing the role equally, like, you know, cameras were getting tossed back and forth and boards and just absolute fun chaos.
That's cool.
But definitely an adventure for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you end up following the story of one person in particular, or how did you decide to kind of go about telling the story?
Yeah. We kind of followed a few kids pretty, you know, evenly throughout the years. But we definitely, the focus was more on the transformation of the camp itself. We were trying to, the community as a whole and that relationship to the water. But there are a couple kids that we followed more so in that process that you'll see in the film.
Jay, I just wanted to just ask you, because you kind of talk, you brought up the word counselor, and then he was like, well, it's not exactly counselor, but you're definitely teaching surfing and you're with the kids and you're kind of interacting with them a lot and providing guidance. Have you seen that kind of growth happen with kids?
I think the kids seeing a bunch of adults cooperating, getting along, and being a really good team is number one, what they're getting out of this. Visually seeing and participating in a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, that is interesting, because it's, there's safety involved, right? You have to do things the right way. You have to be tracking a bunch of different people that are out in the water. Like all those things have to happen. And that is an interesting part of it. Like you can't just send a bunch, you can't just go, okay.
Yeah. Right? And at first we had to be very, you know, you have to be on the kids and explaining everything. And now, like this year, they were just doing it on their own.
Cool.
Yeah. That was definitely a huge part in the early years, was the diligence and structure into safety. You know, we brought in AMC instructors from Sitka and Southeast to teach like multiple days worth of water safety and training. We had CPR training. We had kids learning about, you know, outdoor survival skills. And a lot of these kids come with a huge amount of knowledge from the boating and fishing community. You know, they're past in that. So it's really neat to see how those are translated into surfing and just how much knowledge is continued and shared.
Yeah, that's really cool. And Ryan, what does a typical day at surf camp look like? I mean,
I think the typical day at surf camp, kind of just to go back to what Jay was talking, is like we instruct the kids, but we're also kind of in a way like not, we're like counseling mentors. They're counseling us, mentoring us. Like it's kind of a big exchange. So it's like we come in wanting to teach kids about surfing. They might teach us how to like grab some sap off a tree and start a fire. Or like, you know, their parents might invite us to grab a fish off their boat. So it's like kind of this big collaborative like community thing. But like logistically, usually in the beginning, the first like hour or two was just trying to get the kids in the wetsuits or like teaching them how to put on the wetsuit. Yeah. And now it's luckily like 5 years down the line. Now it's like, all right, everyone go into the woods, put their wetsuit on, and then like we'll meet you like by the water. Right. Now it's like 30 minutes. But before it was like, all right, we're going to put the wetsuits on for 2 hours. We're going to surf with the kids for 2 hours, and then they're going to take off their wetsuits for 2 hours.
And have you seen it grow? Is the amount of people growing? Are there young kids there that are like, can't wait to get in the water kind of thing? Is that starting to happen?
So absolutely.
Yeah. In the beginning, it was definitely like, we got a couple kids in the water and then they told all their friends about it. And then they all really wanted to go. So the next camp had like three times as many people. And now I think we got like almost every kid in Yakutat has gotten into surf camp, and they all are constantly talking about surf camp. And now their parents are like, I literally have lived here all my life. Now I see my kids surfing. I never thought it was a thing that I could do. Now it's something that I want to do with them. So it's like kind of the training wheels are starting to come off, and now the community's kind of taking it and making it their own.
Yeah, amazing. Cool, that is an amazing thing, because of course surf culture that happens where places where people surf all the time, that's just something that happens in communities and happens. People travel to go to places. I mean, Yakutat has been well known for many, many years as this amazing place to go surf, a really unique place to go surf in the world. But to have the community truly a part of supporting it and wanting to grow it is a really cool phenomena that's happening there. That's awesome.
I think the important thing about the special thing about the surf club has been like, before it's been like, I've seen a lot of videos of people going to Yakutat and being like, we're in this most remote place. There's no one around.
Right.
There's no surfers. And now when
that Alaska, you know, remoteness kind of whole thing that sells reality TV.
Yeah. And so now when those people go and make films, like they're going to start seeing a small community of kids that are there and like their parents. And like that could be part of their story, instead of just saying that they're in the middle of nowhere when they just took an Alaska Airlines flight. Like now there's a community that they can interact with. And
how have you made it happen? I mean, funding, things like that. How have you scrapped together that stuff through the years? Do you want to
talk about that? Yeah, I mean, we've been lucky having a lot of folks in the community involved, like Gloria, Gloria Wolf and Ralph Wolf and multiple members coming in to help with grant funding, building up supplies in that way. But we had a lot of donations initially. First year we had Patagonia was able to donate 16 wetsuits. And so we were able to kind of start with that. Ryan actually was buying boards out of his own pocket to help make it happen. And we had some gracious donations from Icy Wave Surf Shop. From shout out to Jack Endicott. He definitely helped get the boards out in the beginning. Cool. Yeah. So,
yeah. And then locally, Sea Alaska, like we went to Sea Alaska, told them about the idea, kind of showed them some initial photos of kind of what we had going. And Anthony Malott and some of their communications team, Matt Carl, they were just like, how can we help? What do you guys need? And they definitely, like, in the early camps, they were helping us with getting enough funding to get instructors there, get some food for the kids. Initially, it was definitely, like, take the kids to the grocery store. What do you guys want to eat? And right. pull out a pocket.
Hot dogs on a stick.
Yeah, yeah, hot dogs on a stick. And now it's turned into, like, even, like, being able to get funding to, like, hire local people to make food for the kids. And so it's been awesome.
Yeah, that's really, really grown into into a little bit of a kind of small institution that's sort of feeding this new part of the culture of that little community.
Yeah.
Very, very amazing.
Yeah.
Well, the film is premiering. You guys, world premiere of a film. That's exciting. It's a premiere. And you also say it's a premiere in space with community. So tell me about that. Just a moment for people to ask questions, things like that.
Yeah.
Hopefully like a moment to inspire people to maybe ask how we got it started or just talk to them like before or after the film and hopefully initiate further community led programs.
Yeah.
You know, more grassroots movements of just helping people that might not directly think they have access to certain activities, then gain those through maybe participation from the community.
And the premiere is Saturday, September 9th. It's happening at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. It's at 6:30. Admission's free. Is there goals or ideas about how to promote the film or use the film in the future or distribute it? Or are there ways that can maybe, I think about grants or things like that, ways that you can show the film? Is that an idea behind it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like it's our hope that a film like this can be used like a tool to, you know, go into other communities and expand the conversation about connection to nature, being able to access these spaces, you know, even conversations around mental health and how that can transform through that type of access.
Yeah.
And so our dream would be, you know, having kids from the camp be able to tour with the film and speak to other youth about their experience and how they might be able to start a similar program in their own community. That would be the dream, the ideal, but, you know, just.
Well, it's a great step towards realizing that dream. With the Tide is the film. It's premiering Saturday, September 9th. Doors open at 6:30 at the University of Alaska Egan Lecture Hall. And admission is free. And that film is all about the Yakutat Surf Camp. And we've been talking to Ryan and Jay and Chelsea about that camp and about that film. Thanks to all three of you for coming in and letting us know about it. Have a great premiere. And thanks for all the work you're doing to kind of improve the life of the whole community of Yakutat with the power of surfing. Very cool. Welcome back to your community-supported public media station, KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon, and I'm Andy Klein, and wrapping up today, really exciting because Hedwig is back. Perseverance Theater has brought Hedwig and the Angry Inch back, and as I was just saying, angrier than ever. Rio Alberto is here, and Salisa Tol is here as well. Did I get that?
Yeah.
Kind of. It's so cool to have you both in here, and Rio, you're taking on the role of Hedwig.
Yeah.
Yes. Is this the role you were born to, or is this something that you, I mean, you must love playing that role. It seems like an amazing role to play.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's a really weird, fun, wacky challenge. And I think there's that additional layer, like you said, so many folks in Juneau might remember when they did it in 2004 with Rory Stitt playing Hedwig, which leaves some pretty big That's heels right. to fill, if you will. Yeah, exactly.
It's an interesting thing to think about playing that character, because I would almost think that, I mean, what's your take on it? I almost think that you might want to, you would worry about playing it too big, or, you know, like it's such a big personality thing, or is it, or is that not true? Like you can't go too big, or how do you bring in the humanness of the character and still maintain like how wild this character is?
Yeah, I think the exciting challenge with being an actor and a storyteller is that you have to get to the core of what this person wants. Like you just have to fill yourself up with whatever they're feeling and use that to justify however big things get. You know, it's like Hedwig, she's a show woman, you know, like she's a rock star. And so like in fact, in her mind, it's like, it could be bigger. We should have pyrotechnics. I don't understand why we don't have like hydraulics, you know, where's the hydraulic lift?
Right.
There's this larger than life personality that can fill any space, whether it's like a black box, a dive bar, or the main stage at PT, which makes it kind of fun. I mean, maybe I'm doing it too big, maybe not. I guess we'll let the director decide.
Go big or go home. Yeah.
Lisa, what's your role in this?
I'm Yitza.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tell me about, were you in part of the production when it was happening before in Juneau?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I was not. It was like the first play that I saw that was a musical, and that actually drew me to musical theater. And shortly after, I was called to do Hair.
Yes, I remember that you were in Hair, but that's really fascinating that this is you mark this as the play that was kind of your inspiration to want to push yourself into that role. I mean, you obviously have always had musical talent and singing talent. You innately have that. Anyone who's seen you and heard you sing knows that. But that's really fascinating to know that this place must be really meaningful for you to be a part of this.
Thank you. Yes. Oh, my gosh. And I love Rory and Sarah Wiseman. Oh, my gosh. They're incredible. Yeah, it was forever ago. I went with my friends to the Hangar Ball, or it wasn't the ballroom. It was just the Hangar, right? It's the Hangar on
the
Wharf.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And all of a sudden, I was like, what? This is happening? And this is theater? This is at Perseverance? Yes, yes.
Not stuffy, not, you know, right, not that thing, but instead it's this interactive and in a different space even.
Oh, yeah. It was like a whole other world,
yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
And that's the vibe that I hope we get to portray for you guys this time around.
Yeah. What are some of the things that when you knew that you were going to bring this in and do this, what are some of the things you wanted to make sure were kind of accomplished, or that you wanted, how did you want to approach this play? I don't know if that's even a well-formed question, but I'm just wondering, you know, it's such a well-known play,
right.
And there must be, and especially even in this town, there's this precedent, right? And there must be precedents nationally and that sort of thing, right? Of how you do this. And there's even a movie, right? So how do you, you know, in that context, how do you want it? What was it that you wanted to get at?
I think this show, it's spoken to me for a while, ever since I first heard the soundtrack. Actually, I think because of that weird musical theater thing where, you know, I was a part of the very like stuffy, I was very Oklahoma Sound of Music, you know, sort of like that was my wheelhouse, mm-hmm. Doing musical theater for a while. I got so sick of it. And, you know, you're always looking for new songs. And so I heard Origin of Love and I was like, I don't know what this is about. I listened to the album and I was like, heck yeah, that's a cool rock concert. And then I didn't watch the movie or see anything to do with it for a few years later. And then I was like, oh my God, what is happening? So I originally performed the role down in Washington last season, in Eastern Washington. And that was really like fast and furious, kind of hit the ground running. We threw it up at the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington, which is a gorgeous historic proscenium theater. And that was kind of one world and one version of how we could do it. And so when I got the call this summer about potentially bringing it back to Perseverance, I thought, okay, well, how are we going to do this differently. How are we telling this story for this community as well? And I wanted to be very intentional with the reality that, like, yes, Hedwig is has been predominantly played by white actors, because, you know, she's German. And also, I just think dominant culture kind of perceives leading people in most of the musical theater canon as being white. That's been like kind of dominant culture's idea, right? It's like, oh, well, if you're running and you have a great voice, you would be great in the ensemble, right? Or like, we'll give you one riff. And I was very clear with this team that I'm not playing a white character, you know, even though she's from Germany. There's a reality of American immigration, or even like military being stationed in Germany. You know, it's reasonable that someone, a Chicano like myself, would have been born in these circumstances, right? So the first thing came with like honoring my reality with this story. The second came with like, what is the deeper story that we can talk about here as well, with bringing in Salisa as a powerhouse vocalist. So to be the powerhouse vocalist, Yitzhak is supposed to be a better vocalist than Hedwig, and that is for sure the reality we're living in. fire, everyone knows.
Everyone knows. She can deny it all she wants.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll sing her praises for her. But it was the other thing was like, how are we also now bringing in Salisa to explore the character that she gets to play as well too? How are we making this story our own? And how are we not shying away from the reality that the very existence of a person outside of the gender binary as dominant culture defines it to be, you know, either man or woman. How are we honoring that story in Alaska right now when it's such a hot button topic? It's interesting because we're kind of being, looked at as like, oh, this theater's gone woke and they're bringing this trans story to the stage. And there are a number of just kind of like things where I'm like, okay, you didn't do your homework in that, because like, first of all, this was done nearly 20 years ago. This isn't new. This show is also not new. This discussion is not new. And the reality is, trans people exist. Queer people have existed outside of the binary for as long as history has existed.
I'm sorry. You know what? We're going to run out of time. I'm sorry. We only have a few seconds left. And I just want to make sure that people know that the show is starting on September 15th and it goes to October 1st. Thanks to both of you for coming in. I'm sorry to cut that short.